Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Nisha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Stitch Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Around the world. Once again, this is Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson, and I'm coming to you from Cerritos, California, ladies and gentlemen, very, very close to the Honda Center, where we just saw UFC 214. I got to tell you, it was really, really quite an experience. I want to talk about all the fights that took place. John Jones just is, I'm sorry, the guy is frightening. I mean, he's just absolutely frightening. He nearly killed Daniel Cormier last night. I mean, it was one of the most vicious knockouts I've seen in my 17 years involved with this sport. I'm not kidding you, folks. You know, you guys all saw it. You guys know exactly what happened. I was there at the arena at the behest of Dana White and UFC. I was put in the cheap seats. I was put in the nosebleed section, where I was surrounded by these trophy women and these nasty UFC fans. UFC fans are nasty, in my opinion, especially the white males, which is pretty much 99% of the people that attend these events. They're white males. I mean, that's what the UFC fan base is, 18 to 49-year-old white males. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm one of these people. I'm the fan first and foremost, but I got to tell you, this knockout of Daniel Cormier was just so vicious. John Jones could kill people in there. I mean, think about how devastating John Jones is. This is a guy who trains, right? And he's fighting people, competitors that have been training their whole lives, accomplished wrestlers, accomplished jiu-jitsu fighters. Fill in the blank. He's fought. He's beaten everybody. And this guy could kill these competitors. You know, John McCarthy stopped at about five or six punches too late last night. And I got to tell you, I was really concerned for Daniel's health. Daniel looked completely out of it after the stoppage. And John Jones could have killed him. And that's a testament to his ability as a striker, as a fighter, his natural athletic ability, his skill set, the tools that he has at his disposal, it's unbelievable. He's just absolutely remarkable. And there was a lot of questions as far as the ring rust and him not looking as good as he did, as he's normally used to doing when he fought Ovince St. Preux. Yeah, there was a lot of question marks, and I got to tell you, John Jones looked better than he's ever looked, I think, yesterday. Now, I don't think it was a total washout. I mean, Daniel, you know, I've even seen some people say, not in the MMA media, but amongst the fans, that Daniel should consider retiring. Daniel, what, 38, 39 years old, could consider retiring. I don't think Daniel should consider retiring because he didn't look that bad up until the knockout. In fact, Dana White had it 1-1. I had it 1-1, and the people around me had it 1-1. John Jones winning the first round and Daniel winning the second round. So up until the knockout, you know, Daniel was doing fine. You know, John Jones, I think, was on pace to win the fight had it gone the distance. But nonetheless, I mean, you know, it wasn't like a bad performance. He just got walloped by a guy that is just on another level. By a guy, if you listen to his comments, he is in his physical prime right now. John Jones is in his physical prime at 30 years of age. He said something very interesting during the post-fight press conference, John Jones. He said, you know, when I was training for this fight, they put me in with four or five of the guys that give me the most trouble at the gym. And I finished three of them by TKO and so on and so forth. That shows you right there just on another level, how on another level this guy is, and just how devastating he is to be just taking out training partners. I mean, TKOing a training partner, I mean, that seems kind of extreme to me. You know, I mean, they probably should have said, okay, you know, we shouldn't let it get to that point. But it is just absolutely frightening, this guy's skill, what he's able to do to a great competitor and a great fighter in Daniel Cormier, who is no slouch, of course, was in consideration prior to this fight for being in the conversation of being one of the best to ever fight. And I think if he had won, if Daniel had won this fight, regardless of the circumstances, regardless of you know, whether it was a decision or whether it was a split decision or what, he would have been in that conversation. The best ever to fight at light heavyweight. Daniel Cormier, of course, winning the Strikeforce heavyweight tournament, winning the light heavyweight title. You know, he was the legitimate light heavyweight champion. He'd beaten everybody in that division. Not everybody, but he'd beaten, you know, guys that were at the top. And Daniel Cormier's only two losses, of course, are to John Jones. But I don't know. After last night's fight, Daniel Cormier's career is not over. There's some talk about him going up to heavyweight. And being the very competitive person that he is, I don't think he's going to retire on that note. I think Daniel's going to come back and probably go to heavyweight, although he'll try to avoid his training partner, Cain Velasquez. He did issue a statement not too long ago. I haven't read it yet. I just kind of got on the air pretty quickly, but I got to tell you, that was the real take-home story of the night, just how devastating John Jones is, and just on another level, what a freak fighter and a freak athlete. And, you know, I felt so bad for Daniel. I don't know if you guys did, because, you know, it was different seeing it in the arena that it must have been watching on pay-per-view, just how dejected he was, just how emotional he was. I mean, I was kind of laughing because, you know, they say that there's no crying in mixed martial arts. I often ridicule females like Kat Zingano for being just ridiculously emotional. But I really, really felt bad. And just to lose that way, and just how much that the fight meant to Daniel going into this fight, I felt bad for him. I really did. I felt concerned for his health. And I felt just bad for him as an individual. It must have been devastating for him emotionally. You know, there's two aspects to this. There's the physical aspect. There were reports that Daniel had suffered a concussion. He was taken to the hospital. obviously right after the fight, didn't do a post-fight press conference, and shouldn't have done an interview, and we'll talk a little bit about that, just how Joe Rogan screwed up there. But there's also the emotional setback of that too. I mean, I these guys are being paid a lot. They're on the highest level of the sport, but you gotta like think of them really. They're human beings just like you and I. You know, they're no different really. And to prepare so hard to look in great shape. Daniel Cormier made weight, which I kind of was surprised by because, you know, as much as Daniel criticized John Jones for being a crackhead, well, Daniel's a food addict. If you know, it takes one to know one. Okay, and in my opinion, he is, and he loves food, and you know, he finds solace and comfort in food, like a lot of people do, like a lot of Americans do. But he you know, prepared well for this fight. He was in great shape. He was emotionally invested in this fight, and he believed that he was going to win this fight. And to be on this stage and to have so many people watching. Dana White says that there's over a million people trending, a million pay-per-view buys. I don't buy it, but we'll have to see, you know, because if they do over a million pay-per-view buys, you could bet that the UFC will release these numbers themselves and instead of waiting for Dave Meltzer. And I don't think that there was a million pay-per-view buys. I don't think there was anything close, although we'll see in the coming days. But to lose in such a devastating fashion, it must have really been emotionally draining on Daniel Cormier. And you listen to what he said after when Joe Rogan put a microphone in his face, which is really embarrassing, which really, really shouldn't have happened. The commission should have stopped it because California, with their new rules now and their new commissioner, they're really, really doing very well and they're doing right by the fighters, in my opinion. They shouldn't have interviewed him. But what he said was, he said, you know, I guess if I went 0-2, there's no rivalry now. There's no rivalry. That's it. You know, and you could tell it just was really, really heartfelt and really, really disappointing for him. But I got to tell you, it was really a class act on the part of John Jones. I was really proud for him because I've always been a John Jones fan. And I like him. You know, I know he sometimes comes across as unlikable and people perceive him as arrogant, cocky. I don't think so on John Jones. I think, you know, he comes across as a likable guy. You know, just before this fight, a couple weeks ago, I don't know if you guys know this, but John Jones actually picked up a homeless person, drove him to Walmart, you know, got him food, got him clothes. You know, that was a good gesture. You know, and I think he gets too much flack for his outside competition behavior and all that stuff. I mean, rightfully so, but that's not the story to John Jones to me, okay? The story to John Jones is his athletic ability, his fighting prowess, his skill set, his domination over the light heavyweight division, and the type of person he is. And for him to go and to really try to console Daniel, who was clearly out of it, I thought it was really, really good gesture. And John Jones hit a home run last night. He could not have been better in his accepting in his speech afterwards. He could not have been better as far as the respect that he showed Daniel Cormier. And it's a real testament to his character. And in the post-fight conference, a press conference, he was honest. He said, you know what? At the end of the day, I'm a wild mother effer, okay? That's an honest assessment. So that means that, to me, he still has this desire to be a hedonist. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being a hedonist. The problem for John Jones is that he is a professional athlete. He's a champion. He's got 3 children. He's got a wife, and it's hard to be a hedonist when you have those things. I'm a hedonist myself, okay? I'm someone that, you know, if it causes pleasure to me, I do it. I do whatever pleases me first, okay? We can argue about the merits of that. We can argue whether or not that's good or bad, but you know what? That's my life. That's what I do. I'm a single guy. I don't have any children. I can afford to do that. That's how I choose to live. That's how I roll. John Jones, on the other hand, is not. John Jones, you know, has the UFC. He has the championship belt. There are various stakeholders in his life that he can't really afford to be a wild mother effer at the end of the night, because it will adversely affect him and the other stakeholders around him and the UFC and whatnot. And, you know, to me, it almost doesn't matter, because his skills, his fighting, the in-ring, the in-competition accomplishments are all that matters. Okay, John Jones is not being graded on his outside behavior, and it doesn't make a difference. I know there are a lot of people talking about his behavior outside of the cage and how, will he clean up, will he won't clean up. To me, it doesn't make a difference. As long as he's compliant with USADA, and as long as he can defend his title, I don't care what he does outside of the cage. It makes no difference. The guy's a hedonist. Look, I got news for you. Probably 60 or 70% of MMA fighters are smoking marijuana. Probably more than that. Okay, I can guarantee that. Joe Rogan was correct when he said that most MMA fighters are smoking marijuana. So you think that it's all health-related, medical-related? No. They're smoking marijuana because it calms them down. It produces some effect for their body and their mind that they like. So really, you can make an argument that, you know, 70 or 80% of MMA fighters are just like John Jones. The only difference is that, you know, they haven't been caught in the circumstances that he's been caught. Look at this Cowboy Cerrone, okay, who I thought won last night, but we'll get into that. Cowboy Cerrone is a total hedonist. I mean, he is. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, that's his life. If he wants to live on a ranch with other fighters and get drunk and get stoned and you know, go out and kill rattlesnakes and blow up stuff in the desert and do all types of wild stuff that he does, that's great. I'm not judging him, but that's what MMA fighters are. And I think John Jones, unfortunately, has gotten a lot of negative publicity and some unnecessary flack for just being what other people are in their lives. You know, John Jones, a while back, had a really, really good point. He said that one time he was having a conversation with the garbage man, and the garbage man was almost lecturing him about his behavior. And he was thinking to himself, you know, you're just the same as me. The hell? I'm getting 90 seconds on a Block Talk Radio. I'm also live on Blog Talk Radio here. He said, you're the same as me. You and I are just the same. The only difference between you and I is, you know, my so-called demons are made public more so than your demons are. You know, we're the same. And he's absolutely right. You know, a garbage man or fill in the blank, any you know, working class person has the same activities and does the same things as John Jones. Now, granted, they don't, you know, hit and run somebody. We understand that John Jones has had real objective legal problems. But in terms of the vices, in terms of I don't want to say addiction, but personal behavior, there's really, really no difference. And, you know, one thing that I could complain about Daniel Cormier in the lead up to this fight is just his judging and his almost apathy towards drug addicts. And I posted this on Twitter last night at the arena. And I think part of the reason why people don't like Daniel Cormier, there's a few different reasons. One is because he's too much of a preacher sometimes. He's too much of someone that, you know, wags his finger at John Jones and calls him a junkie and calls him this and calls him that. And people don't like that, I think. People don't like people that are too prescriptive in their lives. And that's you know, how I am, too. I don't like people that wag their finger at me and tell me that I'm beneath them because I like to do this, that, and the other thing. I hate it. I hate self-righteous people. And I think sometimes Daniel could come across as self-righteous. I think he could come across as you know, being not narcissistic, but just a little bit too preachy. And, you know, he does some good things in his personal life. He helps out with charity. By all accounts, he's a great teammate, a great mentor at his camp, the American Kickboxing Academy. And he's just, you know, he's a good role model. There's no question. But I think that's part of the reason why people don't like him, or people really favor John Jones in the lead up to this fight. The second reason I think a lot of people don't like Daniel Cormier is because he tries to come across, or he tried to come across as sort of a heel, a sort of a bad guy in some of his fights after the Anthony Johnson, the second Anthony Johnson fight. And others, and people just can see right through that. So, you know, there are many different reasons why I think people don't like Daniel. But, you know, people have gravitated to John. People support John because Americans can identify with someone like John Jones who has personal struggles, and they appreciate that. And they appreciate fighters and celebrities and athletes that are honest about it, that don't put on a front, you know, an eminence front and say, oh, you know, I have everything under control. I'm perfect and I don't have anything. No, you know, I mean, you know, John Jones has been very open and continues to be very open about what he faces and how he's going to continue to face his demons going forward. And I think that's a real important reason why people do like John Jones and people can respect him. Now, as far as what's next for both of these guys, as I said, Daniel's most likely going to go up to heavyweight because he's got no place now in the light heavyweight division with John Jones as champion. John Jones saying he wants to fight Brock Lesnar. I got to tell you something. I think this would be a good fight. John Jones is very honest about the money fight. You know, he deserves a money fight. He's absolutely right. You know, he has earned that. He's fought a number of fighters. He hasn't lost since when he fought Matt Hamill. That technically wasn't a loss. So he deserves the fight with Brock Lesnar. However, Brock Lesnar is still under suspension and has to go through 6 months of USADA testing before he's eligible to fight John Jones. So it's really going to be up in the air as far as the Brock Lesnar fight. But I got to tell you, I would love to see that fight. That fight would be a pay-per-view money fight. A lot of people would get that fight because they want to see Brock Lesnar. They want to see somebody, a good friend, Rob Epps. Thank you so much, my friend, my brother. Rob Epps in the chat room. Love you, man. Thank you. Yeah, so, you know, that would be a great, great fight for a doped-up Brock Lesnar. Well, he wouldn't be doped up, theoretically, we'd hope, because he'd be undergoing USADA testing to fight John Jones. And it's another fight that John Jones should win pretty handily. He was asked during the press conference yesterday if he wants to fight Stipe. He said no. Stipe doesn't have the name recognition. He said that he's not afraid to fight anybody, but he wants to fight those that are going to make him the most money, and Stipe doesn't have the name recognition, and he's probably right about that. He also expressed interest in fighting Ozdemir, Volkan Ozdemir, who was absolutely devastating in his knockout versus Jimmy Manoa last night, knocked him out in the first round. In a minute or so, I don't have the exact time, but he's now won three in a row. And this is another option for John Jones. If he can't fight Brock Lesnar until, you know, next year, whatever, because, again, Brock Lesnar is still under USADA suspension. If Brock Lesnar had continued to be tested, if he didn't pull himself out of the testing pool, he would be eligible to fight sooner. Probably by now he'd be eligible to fight, but he didn't. And so that's kind of up in the air. And Dana White hasn't talked to Brock Lesnar. And so it's really uncertain, but that would be a great fight. But in the meantime, you know, just to keep John Jones active, I would want to see him fight Ozdemir, because I think John Jones now, depending upon what the pay-per-view numbers do, I think he's going to be, reveal himself as the second UFC draw to Conor McGregor, pay-per-view draw to Conor McGregor, okay? The reason why Ronda Rousey was a draw was because Ronda Rousey, before she got knocked out versus Holly Holm, was the best. You know, Ronda was the best female fighter out there. She was devastating. She had the it factor. She had the personality. She had just, she had it. She had the look, everything. And so, yeah, people would buy Ronda pay-per-views. You know, people would pay money to see her fight. Absolutely. The same thing, I think, is happening now with John Jones. People want to see the best in their fight. They want to see somebody that is basically undefeated, that has a personal saga, that is relatable. And I think the numbers are going to be really revealing, because they will tell us whether or not John Jones is that pay-per-view draw, the pay-per-view draw that the UFC really needs as they go forward. They really do. And so I would want to see him fight Ozdemir. I would love to see him fight Ozdemir, if he can't fight Brock Lesnar right away, which appears to be the case. So that was really, really the take-home message for me last night. It's just how devastating John Jones was. You also had Tyron Woodley defend his belt versus Damian Maia. This was cringeworthy. It really was. But I got to tell you, everybody's blaming Woodley. I was defending Woodley on Twitter, and everybody just gives this guy so much crap. They hate him. The UFC fans absolutely hate him. And it goes back to this demographic I was talking about the 18 to 49-year-old demographic. And, you know, look, it's hard to say. You can't prove that it's race-related, because they, on the one hand, like John Jones. Why do they like John Jones and hate Tyron Woodley? I don't know. It's like you would need a social scientist to friggin' answer that question. There's no answer for that question. I really don't know. But I know that Tyron Woodley, as a champion, has done virtually more than most champions out there, or any champion out there. Tyron Woodley, according to himself, has defended his belt 4 times in just under a year, which is unheard of. He's fought the number one contender. He's fought specialists. He got a lot of flack for wanting the quote money fights versus the Diaz brothers. When Dana White and the fans dictated that's not going to happen. Guess what they did? Guess what he did? He fought Stephen Thompson twice. Okay. He fights Damian Maia. Now they're talking about him fighting Robbie Lawler. It's like they're punishing him. And then they give Michael Bisping this GSP fight. So now, according to Dana White, that ship has turned around and sailed right back into the UFC docks. I mean, it's kind of funny how he put it. But I will say that fight doesn't make sense, but it does make sense now, considering the fact that what are they going to do? What are they going to do with Bisping? They really should have him fight Luke Rockhold again. If Luke Rockhold beats David Branch, they should have him fight. Bisping. But instead, what they're doing is they're giving Bisping his money fight. They've allowed Bisping to sit out with an injury, and not defend his title. While Tyron Woodley is defending his title versus everybody. And it's not fair. And you know, Dana White says, well, you know, Michael Bisping comes to fight. I know Michael Bisping is going to come to fight. When? I mean, Michael Bisping didn't fight against Dan Henderson. Michael Bisping arguably lost that fight in front of his hometown. Michael Bisping's face looked like a hamburger meat, you know, and that was a handpicked opponent that was outside the top 10. You know, Michael Bisping, the Michael Bisping of 2016 and 2017 is not the Michael Bisping of 5 years ago and 10 years ago. That ship has sailed, okay? So Michael Bisping gets preferential treatment as a champion, gets to milk this knee injury, gets to film movies and you know, roll over hoods. And a big shout-out to Rafian Stotts. How are you, man? Hope to see you back soon, my friend. You know, he gets all the preferential treatment while Tyron Woodley gets this flack. But you know what? Tyron Woodley has a good attitude. And he said, you know what? I'm still going to fight. I'm still going to fight anybody that they can put in front of me. And by doing so, I am going to take George St. Pierre's record. I'm going to take George St. Pierre's title of being the best welterweight out there. So that is, you know, he's dealing with so much adversity. And I can only imagine, could you imagine how much this guy Tyron Woodley feels? You know, just imagine how bad he feels. This guy, he does everything. He's a community leader. He's a great analyst. He's a great fighter. He's a great role model. He's got, you know, multiple children. And he just can never get a break, can never get a break from the fans and never get a break from the UFC. So they punish him for last night's fight. They had Joe Rogan throwing that shot afterwards about how this was the lowest in terms of strikes. It set a record for the least strikes thrown during a championship bout, which is a real shot at Tyron Woodley. They hold him responsible for this fight. You know, it's like, how can you hold him responsible for fighting Damian Maia, who I have a lot of respect for? But Damian Maia is known as a one-dimensional fighter. He's going to take you down, and he's going to try to submit you. That's what he does. And I knew, and everybody knew, that Tyron Woodley is not getting taken down. You know, Tyron Woodley has something like a 90% takedown defense in the UFC. You're not getting that guy down, okay? I knew it wasn't going to happen. So you had five rounds of this. You had 17, 18 takedown defense, whatever it was, or takedown attempts by Damian Maia that just failed. Everybody's booing. And let me tell you, the fans were just absolutely crazy. The fans had the phones all around the arena. They did the wave. There was more action in the stands than there was in the octagon. That's not surprising. But they entirely blamed it on Woodley. And every time Maia tried to get a takedown, they were the fans were really, really rooting for Maia. And so it was fun. But, you know, I just think it's unfair. I think now, what are you going to do? You're going to have Tyron Woodley fight Robbie Lawler again? Do you think Robbie Lawler looked good yesterday? I don't think he looked good. I think he looked slow. I didn't even give him that decision, although I have to go back and look at the fight. But, I mean, give me a break. You know, it's just, I don't know what the guy could do. I would love to see him fight George St. Pierre to establish who is the best welterweight of all time. But if he can't fight George St. Pierre, if they're going to give Michael Bisping a gift and give him a GSP fight, which he may or may not win, to me it doesn't make a difference because George St. Pierre is not a middleweight. George St. Pierre is a welterweight. So even if George St. Pierre does win, you know, what does that do for the division? It does nothing for the division. You know, I understand that what's his name is hurt, so I'm a little bit less annoyed at this matchup. Had, you know, when they tried to make this initially, you know, earlier on in the year. So, but to me, it doesn't make any sense. It does nothing for that division. And you know, you got guys like Rockhold, you got guys like Yoel Romero. You know, and others that are basically in limbo now because Michael Bisping has got the biggest mouth and is just the most classless person. But yet, you know, he gets preferential treatment from the boss. Dana likes him. GSP and him like each other. GSP and him are like you know, they're like boyfriends, so to speak. They really are. I'm sorry, but I don't mean to be crude there. But they really are. And so, you know, that's what happens. So Tyron Woodley is going to have to fight Robbie Lawler again, who he knocked out in, you know, 50 seconds. And I don't think that fight is really, really going to change. I think the same outcome is going to occur. Then you had the Cyborg versus Tonya Evinger fight. Okay, this is Chris Cyborg's first title fight in the UFC for the vacant UFC featherweight championship. The featherweight championship was vacated by Jermaine Durandamy, who didn't want to fight Cyborg. Nobody and their mother wants to fight Cyborg. Dana White said that Holly Holm backstage has offered to fight Cyborg, and that'll be an interesting fight. But Cyborg is going to clobber her. Just like I knew that she was going to do to Tonya Evinger. I mean, Tonya Evinger was a huge, huge underdog going into this fight. But I got to tell you something. You got to give your credit to Tonya Evinger. I got to tell you, she is very nice. She's very personable. You know, she talks to fans on Instagram. She is just one of those people that doesn't care. She is who she is. And if you don't like her, then screw you. That's the type of person I am, and I appreciate that. I really do, Tonya. She's educated. She's a smart woman. And she requested to fight Cyborg, according to herself, four times. She said that I wanted to fight Cyborg four times. And finally, you know, she gets the call to fight Cyborg. And the big take-home message for me for this fight wasn't what Cyborg did, because everybody knew what Cyborg was going to do. Everybody knew that Cyborg was going to, you know, have the edge in striking and wasn't going to be taken down and was going to be the bigger girl compared to Tonya. I mean, Tonya's a 135-pound fighter. You know, Tonya is not a big girl compared to Cyborg. But the take-home for me was just how tough Tonya was. You know, Tonya took some really, really good shots, and she has a really, really good chin. And she said that she wanted to go five rounds. She said that she didn't know why she was she didn't get up in the third round, but for some reason she didn't get up, and she lost the fight via TKO. She was disappointed in herself. She thought she could do better if not win. And, you know, she'll be back, I'm sure. I'm sure Dana and the UFC appreciated her fighting, but she'll be back at 135. She's not going to be back at 145. And so, you know, they still have Cyborg, and you know, Cyborg will probably fight Holly Holm, or maybe they'll give her Katsingano. I don't know. It's there are not too many fighters at 145 that want to fight Cyborg. They don't have an influx of fighters. They have Invicta fighters. I mean, you've got someone like Pam Sorensen, like this new Felicia Spencer, who's undefeated in Invicta. You've got Megan Anderson, of course, but there's not a real steady division there at the featherweight division in the UFC. So that really wasn't a surprise there, but I just was surprised how tough Tonya was. No question about that. You can't take anything away from her. Now, there were some other fights on this card I spoke about. I really enjoyed the other female fight. What's her name? Alexandra Albu versus Kaylin Curran. That was a real fight of the night candidate where, you know, Kaylin, I thought, could have got the decision, but that was a real back-and-forth fight. Some people were critical of the skills that these ladies were showing, but you know, overall, I thought it was an entertaining fight for the fans. A lot of transitions, a lot of strikes being landed on both fighters. I don't think Albu looked incredible. I think she keeps her head up straight, and I think that she's going to be susceptible when she fights higher skill opponents. But Kaylin, whatever you want to call her, she is a very, very tough fighter who her record is not indicative of her skill. You know, she's now got a losing record, but she's a real, real tough competitor who deserves a lot of credit. And in my opinion, next to, you know, Daniel Cormier and John Jones got the fight of the night last night, but I thought you could have easily awarded that to the female featherweight strawweight competitors. So that was really, really good fight. Aljamain Sterling looked very, very good. I'm glad to see he got the right end of the decision, and he's someone I definitely want to see more from in the future, beating Henan Barral, the former champion. You know, you had Ricardo Lamas, my friend, Ricardo the Bully Lamas, beating Jason Knight, and that was a fight I kind of wasn't sure about going into, but I'll tell you, that was a real, real tough fight as far as it lasted, with Ricardo Lamas getting the TKO in round one over a very tough and durable Jason Knight, who took a lot of punches in that fight and really, really made a lot of fans, made a lot of new fans. I like Jason Knight. He's a good Mississippi boy, good Southern boy. He comes across as a workman's type fighter, someone who's not interested in the glamour, someone who just wants to go out there and fight and give the fans their money's worth. And he definitely seems like a humble guy out of there in Mississippi, where he talks about how there's nothing to do except go to Walmart over there in Mississippi. Well, I just came from Walmart. I just came from Walmart here in Cerritos, California. Of course, I used to work at Walmart. I worked at Walmart for 4 years. I was a great loss prevention associate. I was great at my job. I won awards. Walmart sent me all over the country. I went to Arkansas. I went to Colorado. It was great service. The people there at the Cerritos Walmart were fantastic, very nice. I was approached by two managers asking me if I wanted help. Now, compare that to the East Coast, where you can't get anybody to help you on the East Coast. So I can only imagine what it's like in Mississippi, where Jason Knight is, where he trains and he goes to Walmart or Dairy Queen or they go fishing, whatever they do down there. But nonetheless, you know, Jason Knight is a very, very young and good competitor, and I can't wait to see him fight again. It's going to be very, very interesting to see him fight because, like I said, the fans can relate to him. The fans appreciate him. I don't care for some of these nicknames. I mean, you know, they call him, a Hick Diaz or, what's the nickname that Ricardo, the hillbilly zombie or whatever. It is what it is, but he's a likable guy. I appreciate him. And, him and Chaz Sherman are the only Mississippi native fighters, as I understand it, in the UFC roster. And good on them. So you had that. You had Drew Dober fighting, beating Josh Berkman. It was really, really a great card. Now, I got to tell you what happened to me, because I drove like a nut job. I am. I drove all the way from New Jersey to California in my Hyundai Accent, which has over 200,000 miles on it. Okay. I left on Tuesday about